Hello and welcome to Two Nerds Sitting on a Couch, in which two nerds sit on a couch and discuss science fiction and fantasy. Two Nerds is here today to talk about Tales of the Walking Dead, which is the series, you know, anthology series based on the world of The Walking Dead.
/ Tales from the Dark Side.
Yeah, it definitely has that vibe. And I think part of the reason we wanted to talk about it is because, A, there was a Groundhog Day episode, which, you know, dovetails into our...
Starring Parker Posey.
Right. But then also, I think that it's just really, really cool to see somebody having fun in the Walking Dead universe.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's something really depressing about 11 seasons or 12 seasons or however many seasons there are of a show in which people just sort of constantly die.
Like, yeah.
Like,
or worse, like, find ways to be evil to each other. You
right.
Because it's all about how evil can you be to each other.
Right.
And that's how, like, it keeps getting bigger and badder every season, is that, like, the evil gets bigger and badder.
Right. Yeah.
Until it's finally society.
Yeah. We live in a society. Is this most recent season. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's just tough because, I mean, maybe that makes sense with our sort of, you know, malaise that we have going on around us. But it is true that there's not a lot of fun to be had in Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, part of the other problem is that, like, it's a world, which means that you can stick characters kind of in different places and times, but the world itself is pretty bounded by, you know, the source world is what it is. And so at a certain point you start running out of stories unless you're really inventive or you get a whole new team that's got like a real creative fire under their butts. You start running out of ways to tell those same stories and you need to start looking for other ways to do it. You know, I mean, I remember, one of the other shows that was long running that we got into very early on was the X-Files. And they had a great mix of, you'd have like a Bigfoot episode and then you'd have some of the Greys and then like a couple of episodes about what they're doing with the cigarette smoking man and it's spooky and it's like this sort of ongoing thing, and then they'd have another couple of episodes of something else, and then as the seasons went on, I mean, because that was a long running show and they had to figure out how to reinvent themselves to make themselves interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things they did was they would get different writers and allow them some freedom, like the Jose Farrar.
Jose Chung's from Outer Space.
Jose
Every single
Outer
time
Space.
You're like, Jose Farmer?
Jose, can you see?
Yeah, it's always not Jose Chung. Like, it's amazing to me.
Yeah, well, it's just such an unlikely name that that can't be the right one.
No, it is. I mean, it's very like Senior Chang kind of name. Yeah. Like, it's definitely like.
Anyway, so those episodes are just, they're just adorable. They're hilarious. They are irreverent, and they break the reality of the X-Files. And they break it in a way that's not just a Sasquatch episode. It's a completely different, like, take on the world. It's like we've gone from having a movie to having an animation. It's like it's a completely different way of interpreting it. And I think that's what the Tales of the Walking Dead really does, is that it allows each episode to do that. And it's like it's starting a season and saying, okay, we're tired of the way, like, it's a great world, we like it, let's see what else we can do within that world if we start breaking some of the rules. And so each one of these episodes breaks the rules in really specific ways to tell its story.
And I think some of the rule breaking, and I think you see this a little bit in the most recent season, because, you know, obviously, Eugene and them are there's like a whole like kind of spy story going on.
Yeah, which,
I mean,
gets back to my my rule where if you have a series go long enough, it will eventually end up as an international spy.
Oh my god, it's totally true.
Because I picked Perfect. You know, one was just about this girl going to college and trying to fit in and singing, and then you know, two, it's like, well, now it's a bigger. We're gonna go whatever bigger and better, and the third one is like, fuck it, we're international spies.
Yeah, no, and that happened with you know, Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious, yeah.
By four, they were international spies.
International spies. They weren't just people stealing shit a la Point Break. They were like straight up international, like, precision driver team.
Yeah, and now they...
We're going to need at least two precision drivers and a front man. And then, like, you know, they had it all worked out. It's a heist show now.
Yeah, which is, plus one. I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but...
Lord of the Rings. That starts out as just they're trying to get from Hobbiton to Rivendell, and then all of a sudden they're international spies.
Oh my god, it's totally true.
Star Wars. The middle episodes are just Luke Skywalker trying to get his ass off Tatooine, and by the time we get to the prequels, it's fucking C-SPAN in space. Those guys are straight up spies.
Yeah, it's totally true. Okay, you know, it's
Harry Potter.
It's like completely... Oh my god. You are completely blowing my mind right now, and I don't even know how to fucking deal with it. Like,
I mean, at some point, they're going to give up on life and be like, fuck it, we're international spies. So this is the international spies
season. Well, okay, so that's what's going on in the, like, that's on Maine, right?
Right, because they're international spies. Right.
They're international spies on Maine. But here in the, like, sideshows... they are like mixing the zombie apocalypse with a, you know, heartwarming, road trip. We have a like amnesiac murder situation. There's a Groundhog Day episode. There's a, we're all losing our fucking shit episode. Like, and it's like mixing with other genres in a way that I find really just intensely satisfying.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, it's completely revitalized the show. And if they do another season like this, I will watch it.
Just 100%. Completely there.
Not to skip to the end of the podcast, but completely rewatchable.
No, completely rewatchable. So, I guess, do we want to just start at the beginning and then kind of go through it a little bit?
I mean, it's your show.
All right, I think that's what we should do. So the first one, and they're all... named after the characters, except importantly the last one. So we'll get to that one. But the first one is called Evie/Joe, and it stars Terry Crews and Olivia Munn. And it opens with
slash. This is like the fanfic.
It's like slash fiction. This one is the closest to slash fiction because it does kind of have a romantic subplot.
Yeah, with kind of a nerdy nerd and, you know,
a nerdy nerd and a
hot person who shows up.
Well, she's actually kind of a manic pixie dream girl a little bit. So Terry Crews is living in a bunker underground, and he's got a dog.
Bunker? I barely know her.
He's got a dog who importantly gets killed by zombies, which is sort of his John Wick moment. Because at that point he's like, well, like, you know, when he was in the bunker with the dog, he had something to live for. Now he's just down in a hole.
Right.
So he decides that he's going to go find an internet friend he had. And I can't remember, like, were they talking about the zombie apocalypse or were they...
I don't know.
It wasn't like a fandom.
To be honest, I didn't see the first half of this episode, so...
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think you started it because you thought it was going to be another like crappy Fear the Walking Dead or the what was the teenage one? World of the Walking Dead?
No, World Beyond.
Disney World.
That one ended really well.
Yeah, but it started and middled like garbage. No, that was worst of them.
No. Seasons like 4, 5, and 6 of Fear the Walking Dead are the absolute nadir. Franchise.
Also, to be fair, I never watched any of those.
Yeah, good for you.
I mean, I think the only reason that you were watching Fear the Walking Dead at all is because I was like, you know, I don't really care, and that was the thing you would watch when I wasn't around. So I wouldn't complain that you went and
when
watched
I when I
me.
First had COVID, before you had COVID too. Sorry, thanks. You're welcome. I like finished up Fear the Walking Dead because I needed to punish myself. Apparently, it's so fucking bad. Anyway, so So then it turns into this. He goes on a road trip to find this lady. On the road trip, he sort of
finds a different lady.
Well, no, I mean she fucks his shit up and then like makes him go where she wants him to go.
Right, like he's a hostage.
Like she like highwaymans him.
Right,
and then it's kind of cute actually because you know he's got his motivations and she's got her motivations and. It's just a delightful little, you know, and it's Terry Crews, who is just like a really, really unbelievably
quite funny.
He's very funny. I think he's got wonderful comic timing and he's also just like a delight, you know, like he's like one of those guys like The Rock who you just like want to like go pinch their cheeks.
Yeah, because like however he actually is, he's definitely got some charisma.
Oh my God, you know? His charisma points are just like pinned at tilt, you know? Like, so it's just a really cute little episode. It's not really trying to do much. Of course, when they end up at the bunker of the other lady, it turns out she's a complete psycho and they kind of have to like kill her and escape.
Yeah.
But then it turns into the, like, they decide not to like take over her shitty bunker, but just like strike out. Which I think is like a sort of weirdly hopeful choice. Like, they're just like, we're just going to go be together and on the road.
Yeah, maybe we'll find like Terminus or, you know.
Yeah, right. Maybe. See, but that's the problem is that like if you let a story like that, like 100% of people die.
Into international spies.
Right. And, you know, if you let that scenario go on longer... It would have to be, you know, more and more shit would have been thrown at them until everything became depressing. And then you know what I mean? Yeah. So there's like, there's something kind of nice about just having a little moment where you're just like, yay.
Yeah.
Terry Crews, love you, man.
Yep.
So then the next one, the next episode is called Blair/Gina. And this is the, I think my favorite. This is the Groundhog Day situation. Because, like, speaking of comedy, this is hardcore comedy.
Yeah. I mean, they are both very, very funny. I mean, Parker Posey being in this is just, I think, a stroke of genius in casting. Because, I mean, she just brings a hell of a lot of indie cred.
Yeah,
and
if
you can convince her to do it, either A, she was already a hardcore fan and lobbied for it.
Right?
Or B, is just like... you know, sees the value in what they're doing with this as it is, you know, and it's, or CA, she's looking for a really fat payday and whatever.
No, but it's just perfect. And I looked up the other actress who is also very, very good. And she's a comedian called Jillian Bell, who is in a bunch of stuff that I kind of haven't seen. I think I've maybe seen one or two things with her, but I don't remember her, but she also is very good. So the situation with that one is it opens, I think it's the one that's set earliest to the zombie apocalypse. Like,
right, because it's just breaking out. It's like they're still in an office, things are still normal.
Right, but you kind of get the sense that this is the last day.
Yeah, no, I think it is the last day, and that's why it's, you know, cool that they set it up as a Groundhog Day.
Right, yeah. You know. Yeah, because then they just play it out. So
it's almost like Edge of Tomorrow, where it's like, let's see how far we can get without getting killed by zombies.
Yeah, it's totally true. Or becoming a zombie and then killing the other person.
Yeah.
All the
various iterations.
Yeah, that's actually something I want to talk about. Okay, so it opens with Parker Posey is the boss of a insurance agency.
Yes.
And
super oblivious and overbearing.
Yeah, super oblivious.
Nobody likes her.
No. And, you know, so she's all, like, and the phones are ringing off the hook because the zombie apocalypse is happening. And it's not far enough down the road that people aren't still calling their insurance agents.
Right.
Which is an interesting, because at some point you stop calling the insurance agent.
Yeah. Because the phones don't work.
Well, and also insurance doesn't exist.
Right. Like, well, and rather quickly, I think people would start realizing that it's not going to cover the zombie apocalypse.
No, right.
No matter how much you may want to, the problem is you have to get through all the red tape. And then 6 months later, you can collect, mm-hmm. but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean...
Well, anyway, so that's where we are. We're at the place where, like, things have not broken down yet, and...
They're not even aware that things have broken down.
They know something's fucked up. They are, you know, because that keeps coming up. Okay, so she gives this, like, kind of horrific pep talk to her, like, various people who work for her.
Right.
There's, you know, the agents, and then there's the receptionist.
Blair.
No, she's, Parker Posey is Blair.
Oh, Gina.
Yeah, Gina is the receptionist. Right. And, you know, and it's, like, it's all the subtext of, like, everybody hates Blair and, you know, whatever. There's, like, a, kind of a gag with the coffee mugs and whatever. Right. So then, you know, Parker Posey decides to leave with her fiance to go to the island, quote, quote. I don't know what that is.
Right.
And she runs into Gina at a
gas station.
At a gas station. Gina's just coming out of the gas station. And so, you know, Blair jumps out of her car, runs up to Gina, is like, "You're fired," like in her total Parker Posey way.
"I told you to stay until the office closed, and it's clearly not closed yet."
"Yeah, you are terrible at your job." And then she fires her, at which point a woman is begins to be eaten by her zombie husband. They fall out of a car, zombie husband's attacking her. Everybody's like, "Ack, what the hell is going on?" And then there's
an opportunistic police officer.
Yes.
Who is obviously aware something's wrong and is just trying to commandeer shit. But then her friend, for some reason, has a shotgun in her trunk, which seems a little sketchy.
Her brother gave it to her because he was worried about having it around his children.
Oh, which we find out after she uses the shotgun. And it ends up making the gas truck explode. And then they die and wake up back at the office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, "All right, everybody, I'm leaving."
Right.
"Gina, you need to stay here until 5:30.
Right. And
you are, know, you sealing my mugs?
Right. And somebody's leaving the back door open. And, you know, there's all these little details that sort of end up getting explained, actually.
Yeah. It's kind of neat that it wraps up.
It's super cute. Anyway, so it just keeps reiterating and reiterating until, you know, in the first couple times they keep kind of looking at each other, but not like breaking the
Because so far this is just a weird thing that's happening, and it unfolds slightly differently,
right,
as the time goes by.
Eventually they're like, "So we're in a time loop, right? Am I right?"
Right.
And they start talking about their situation with each other,
which is really fascinating. I mean, and the way that it evolves is, it's because it's a comedy. It's well, I mean, I guess almost all Groundhog Day movies are comedies. Very few exceptions, you know, like Time Cave, which is, I know that's not the name of it, but it should be.
No, I think it is Time Cave.
Is it?
No, it's Time Trap.
Time Trap.
That's not Groundhog Day, though.
No, that's true. It's just straight time travel. But I mean, Edge of Tomorrow is not funny. I mean, there are little bits of humor, but it's an action movie.
Right.
But that's still totally a perfect day.
The one about the cop killing the black man is not a comedy.
Oh, God. is like dark, so dark.
And that one's called Two Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, that one's rough. But this one is more like it's like Russian Doll, where it's like kind of ha ha funny. Like the ways that they die are sometimes funny.
Yeah.
And then coming back and then just sort of complaining about it felt very Palm Springsy, you know, where it's just sort of like, we are aware that there is Groundhog Day in the world, and now we are going to complain about it because we're trapped in our own time loop for whatever reason. And it doesn't appear to be anything other than like Russian Doll. It ends when you die. And so you get as far as you can before you die.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the mechanism by which you reconstitute. But what I think is really fascinating about the way this one does it, a lot of them, like Groundhog Day in particular, is the exact same day playing out, and he can force it off of its course by being a different person. But as long as he's the same, it's deterministic. It's exactly the same all the way through.
Right.
And for some weird reason, I spent a lot of time today studying Lorentz attractors and understanding like Hurst exponents, which, you know, I mean, it's all of, you know, Poisson distributions, like all of this chaos theory, like really deep into it, mm-hmm. trying to understand how determinism unfolds, you know, and one of the things that like the Hurst exponent does is it provides a what's called a fractal dimension, which is the ratio of change through randomness. And so like you can have a spread, right? Like if you're going to have a 45 degree angle of time, you know, an event through time, and then through this nonlinear, like, but deterministic chaos, mm-hmm. they can diverge by a certain amount. And that divergence is controlled by this fractal dimension, right? So that's the number okay. by which you explain how divergent shit can get from initial conditions.
Okay.
And that's, so what's interesting about this episode in terms of Groundhog Days is that shit goes off the rails really quickly in different ways. I mean, like they end up at the gas station, but beyond that, it could go anywhere. And like very small changes can have very large effects.
Yeah.
For how it plays out, which I think is a really subtle but very fascinating approach to the Groundhog Day genre, because generally they're more deterministic than that. Their Hurst exponent is very close to 0.5.
Yeah, okay.
Which is just a random walk, which is basically the determinism of that is one. It stays right. the same.
It's yeah.
It's neither positive okay. nor negative deviating. But it's kind of cool because then all of a sudden it doesn't matter as much what you know. Like your knowledge of the loop doesn't help you, because quickly events will change. Well, and because very small, like assuming you're starting from the exact same spot in space, mm-hmm. you'll still have some like Brownian motion somewhere else on the other side of the world that will affect things differently
yeah.
and unfold differently. So even though you aren't the only variable anymore.
It kind of makes me wonder if there's like other Groundhog Days going on around them. Like that would be a really, really fun, you know, like that would be really fun.
Like a whole sub-series.
Yeah, a whole sub-series of various Groundhog Days around this event. Anyway, yeah. I just think it's delightful. Because you can film it
very much like Black Summer. Where yeah. it's the same event from different points of view, but closely yeah. related, which is really cool. That one's not funny at all.
No. There's nothing funny about Black Summer.
It's also not Groundhog Day.
No, it's not. But it does have that, like, Rashomon, or that's not quite correct. It does see events from different perspectives, though.
Yeah.
Like, they just sort of touch on each other. Which was something I was thinking about, where... Like, The Walking Dead being an ongoing series for over a decade mm-hmm. is actually kind of odd for, zombie narratives for the most part. Like, mm-hmm. some of the best zombie narratives I can think of don't even have a single protagonist. And they don't have, the point of view may switch and it may move, but... You know,
and from a marketing perspective or from a production perspective, ensemble casts are the best because you can swap out some characters. Like, yeah, you may have a main character,
right?
But you know, generally you can sort of just swap people in and out, and you could shamble along like that for an eternity.
But I was more thinking about like you take something like World War Z, mm-hmm. which you know isn't like. Beautifully written or anything, mm-hmm. but I do think it does something kind of cool and interesting with the zombie apocalypse, and the way it does it is through just multiple narratives in multiple places.
Right.
So, and then you kind of see the other ones sometimes, and that's it. It keeps you from getting trapped in the local,
mm-hmm.
because I mean I've said this before many times, but like I feel like the apocalypse is always a local event. Like, once right. the light goes out, you are, as far as you can get on a bike,
right.
is your world now. and or a car, I guess, but still. Anyway, but it keeps it from getting too local. Because it is interesting to see what's going on in the broader sense.
Right. Because then you can like compare and contrast, like what's similar and different in different areas and how different people approach it and whatever.
Well, and like, and you said it earlier, but like, it made me think of this, that like the fact that this is a Groundhog Day is that it lets you play out that, 'cause that moment between when you know something's wrong and you know that society is over is a small moment.
Yeah.
And the way that they play in that moment is really interesting.
Right.
Because again, they don't even show that moment in The Walking Dead.
Right.
He wakes up 28 days later style.
Right. Yep.
So
Although they do
you
sort of in the Fear the Walking Dead. Because that's kind
Yes.
of how it starts, is with the
Yes.
army is still in control. You still have society, just with fences.
Yeah, actually when it starts everything's just totally normal. So they
Yeah.
do go all the way through it. But even then it's totally bounded by that one family.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So and then I guess the other thing I wanted to mention about this is like in some of the iterations, like Gina turns into a zombie and kills Blair. And at one point where they have like busted into the snack machine and are chatting with each other, Blair asks Gina, she's like, "What do you remember about being a zombie and killing me?" And Gina says, "I don't," which I think sort of existentially is interesting.
Well, she was dead at that point.
Right, but I think that that's sort of, the question of whether zombies have persistent memory.
It's no, I think the question is whether or not the soul resides in the body. I'm not kidding. I mean, that's what this is really talking about when you're talking about like an afterlife, when you're talking about whether or not zombies are cannibals. What you're saying is, are they invested with a spirit, an animus that is more than just the flesh, because obviously when you die, it's the same body, it's just not you anymore. And that's what zombies are. It's the not you.
But I think
But they're
that
obviously something's animating them.
something's
But
like
the idea is that what's animating them is inertia.
right. But I think that you can, like, even taking the concept of the soul out of it, I think that you can talk about some sort of persistent memory in the body.
Like muscle memory, like, yeah.
Ish.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, let's set aside for the second that zombies can't exist because of
No,
physics.
because physics, yeah.
Obviously, those neurons are firing in a particular way. You have stronger neural pathways for muscle memory. So, sure, why wouldn't zombies have that same muscle memory?
Yeah, so anyway, but I'm just saying I thought it was interesting that she was like, yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Like, I
Yeah, because it
mean,
wasn't her.
that's what I would
No, I was
expect. Yeah, that's what I would
dead.
expect.
Right.
But it was cool to see them sort of go there.
Right. Yeah, and it's the whole thing is kind of neat because it's like instead of having a span of time over which you get to know your characters, you have a very tiny window over which you get to know your characters over and over and over and over again. But like the two of them actually, then I wouldn't say they become friends, but they make up. They
They do
come to
definitely come
terms with each other.
right, because there is a certain level of like
They're the last two people on Earth.
well, it, for all intents and purposes, yes,
Yeah.
like they don't, and they also, but they also like kind of do that sort of therapizing through the apocalypse thing where they say their truths to each other.
Yeah, because they never did in real life, and this isn't real life all of a sudden. Like
And
you're pulled out of that.
so they're like capable of just being like, this is the problem with our
Yeah,
situation.
if we were the last two people on Earth, do you think we would get along? And the answer is, I mean, we'd get along.
Because we'd have to. I don't know. I think that they kind of come to a piece of it anyway. And like, and the funny thing is, like, as like sort of goofy and charming and everything as that episode is, like the way it ends, I'm like, oh my God, they're so fucking doomed. Yeah. like you got out of that time loop. Maybe you should have just stayed in the time loop.
Yeah, well, at least you were safe. Now you're going to die.
Yeah, they're fucked. They're so fucked. But, you know, I mean, whatever. It's still a delightful, delightful episode, and I think it's probably my favorite.
Yeah, I would agree.
Easily my favorite.
Yeah, that was the one that I was like, because, I mean, watching the Terry Crews one, I didn't know anything about this thing, so I just sort of assumed that Terry Crews is going to be part of the new ensemble cast for this season. And you were like, no. They're all different people. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So when this thing showed up, like, I'm glad they put this one as the second episode, because I could see putting it thematically as the last episode, because it's kind of like you're rehashing this over and over and over again, mm-hmm. you know, and that's sort of the joke, right? This is the punchline. Mm-hmm. But because it's the best episode, it hooked me. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to watch all of these things all the way to the end. I don't even care. Parker Posey is amazing. And if she wants to put her seal of approval on this... then I'm all for it.
Okay.
So I definitely watched the third one.
Yeah. No, the second. That's the second one.
No, after that.
Oh, okay. So then the third one, I feel like, was kind of a little red meat to the, like, Walking Dead people. Because mm-hmm. this one, like, speaking of the X-Files, this is a mythology episode. Mm-hmm. This is the one called D, and D is Alpha mm-hmm. before she becomes Alpha.
Right.
And so,
only in a better way than the governor before he became the governor episodes.
Ugh. No, they didn't have those though.
Or was it Negan?
No,
I thought it was the governor where he, like, you see his little life and you're just like, oh, did we need to do that? That was dumb. I hate this. But with this, it's like you get to see the origin story of Alpha, and you're just sort of like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I could see that. Sure.
Yeah. Although I have to say, it was one of those things where I thought the situation was more interesting than what happened.
Yeah.
Because it opens with Alpha is, and her daughter are on a riverboat. The zombie apocalypse in full swing. Mm-hmm. And this rich idiot, you know, has a riverboat that is apparently very well stocked. Mm-hmm. And like, she and all of her rich idiot friends are on the boat, and they're just sort of partying their way, like, through the apocalypse, basically.
Sure.
And I feel like this is one of those. And I think the whole, like, it didn't really make much sense to me, but I thought that whole setup was a little bizarre and cool and strange.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of into that part of it. And it sort of gestures to, like, I see this question sort of being asked as, like, you know, there's all these rich assholes that are buying bunkers in New Zealand or whatever, right? And, you know, hiring assholes to cook or whatever. Once the apocalypse actually happens, how do those rich assholes keep all of their workers from killing them and just taking over?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those bigger problems things, right? I mean, like, you can't think of it in terms of money, and all of those guys think of it in terms of gold. And I don't know that even gold is going to make a difference.
No.
Because what you need are bullets, you know? And the people with the bullets are going to be doing everything. And that's the thing, I mean, for me, that's the insight here, that these rich fuckers aren't just buying bunkers. They're buying bullets. Mm-hmm. That's how they planned. Like, you're not going to buy a bunker and not have thought through the implications of an apocalypse.
Okay, no.
They're absolutely buying a bunch of bullets, and they're going to be warlords. That's how you keep your people working.
But I guess that's my question, though, is that, like, you have a bunch of guys that you have now armed. What stops them from turning on you?
Well, I mean, if they're an organized unit, nothing. But if you're the one who controls the flow of bullets, then, you know, that's you have the wealth. I mean, that's the thing, is that it's like, if you can command other people, then you have everything you need. Like, it's not even necessarily loyalty so much as you have a bunch of people who aren't friends with each other, don't necessarily know each other, you don't know their loyalties or motivations, they'll all work together to protect you instead of ganging up on you, because they'll shoot each other to, you know, I mean, like, that's how hierarchies work.
Yeah.
People work that way.
I guess. I'm just saying that, like, I do think that that is an open question, because it really just takes one bullet to kill you.
Yeah, but then, okay, whoever sets themselves up as being in charge, what stops everybody from killing them?
Literally nothing. And so on,
Joker style, until, like, you've killed everybody in your heist posse.
Well,
you know?
I feel like that, and that's exactly how this scenario goes.
Yeah.
That's literally what happens, is that, you know, there's somebody, because Alpha is working as, like, a maid, kind of, you know, like, she's just there to, like, swab the decks and whatever the fuck else. And, like, she's, like, supposed to, like, put on a dress and hang out at their party, too. But she clearly doesn't actually want to.
Right.
Like, this isn't fun for her. And, which is causing some friction. And anyway, like, the bartender or somebody, you know, has let his, you know, asshole friends in. And then it turns into, like, fun and games with shooting everybody. But yeah, so, but I just thought the riverboat thing was, like cool, like, it was a cooler scenario than was actually, like, taken advantage of in the narrative. It just turns into, like, people being dicks, and then, you know, Alpha being Alpha.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess the only sort of, speaking of red meat, like, the only interesting thing, is that at the end, after they're sort of on the run from the riverboat, because everybody's dead or a zombie or both, they run into the Whisperers. And so Alpha didn't start the Whisperers. Like, she joined it and then ended up taking over at some point.
Right.
So
right.
That, I guess that's the quote unquote interesting part.
Yeah.
I don't think I have anything more to say about that shit. the next one is called Amy Dr. Everett. This one has Anthony Edwards. Looking... SG was like, I feel like he's looking a lot like Skinner from X-Files. And I was like, yeah, he kind of has that vibe now.
Yeah.
And then an actress called Poppy Liu. And so this one follows a guy who's sort of being a naturalist about the zombies.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he's taken to calling them homo mortis, which I think is hilarious and stupid.
Well, but you realize towards the end of it that this is his way of coping with the death of his friend in front of him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's to medicalize it, it's to, or scientize it.
Yeah, it's right. It's his way of, like, throwing up a barrier between his emotional state and the state of the fucking world.
Right. But it is also kind of neat to think of it in terms of, like, a nature documentary about zombies.
Yeah, because it actually opens literally with a nature documentary about zombies, because he's got a drone that he's using to, like, follow their movements. And so, like, you get a bunch of drone footage of, like, you know, this is how the herds move through the wilderness or whatever. And and it is, I mean, there's a certain playfulness to that in the beginning.
Yeah.
But by the end, it's completely not playful at all.
Right, right.
And so this is one where, you know, and I think that this is sort of a theme with a lot of these stories, especially the last one, is the deep and abiding trauma that people who survive the zombie apocalypse are all carrying around with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I mention this every single time I talk about zombies, but in the Colson Whitehead book, Zone One, he coins this term called PAST, which is the post-apocalyptic stress disorder, which literally everybody has.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of these really, like, get at that, like, these adaptive and maladaptive ways that people deal with very, very serious trauma.
Right, right.
Anyway, so this one follows it's like a young woman who basically finds his blind. And he doesn't want to let her up, but she's sort of... Oh, no, she doesn't shame him into it. She literally just climbs up into his house and is like, fuck you, I'm going to stay here now.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and she like, hassles him the whole time because she's like, this all this, like, science bullshit is nonsense. Like, this is... What are you even doing with your life?
Right.
And this one ends pretty bummerly because we... I mean, as you said, we determine that... There's like, it's like specimen 21 or something is his friend. And so he's like watching his undead friend stumble around.
Yeah. As a way of maintaining a connection with him. I mean, it's not any different from locking them all up in a barn or whatever. However you want to cope, you know.
And then it kind of horrifically ends with, he's like, you know, she's like, I have these friends. They need help. This is where they are. You need to help me. He's like, there's a huge herd going that way. They're all going to die.
Yeah.
And she's like, fuck you, runs off. And then he, you know, follows later. They're all dead, including her.
Right.
And he starts tagging them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty solid bummer.
Yeah. I'm like... put my coping mechanism on them and follow them around.
Yep, it's true. Which, like, on some level, it's like, I get it, man. That's all really traumatic.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you got to do to, like, get through the day. The next one is called Devon. And this one is, I read somewhere, is sort of based on Memento.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one where the guy, like, wakes up with a zombie handcuffed to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
he's got to, like, sort of figure out who he is and how he got handcuffed and who the real culprit is.
Yes. Yeah, it is very much. And once I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, it's totally Memento.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, like, filmed that way, but there's definitely, like, he's got a fractured memory and he's just trying to, like...
Right. I mean, I remember thinking it was very noir, you know, where it's like...
Yeah.
I'm going to solve this crime and there's a dame whose legs went all the way up, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and that's definitely... I mean, that would be another, like, genre that they're twisting into.
Right.
And this one again has a really interesting setup because it's like a French speaking Acadian community in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Was it Maine or was it Louisiana?
Was it Massachusetts? No, it was Eastern Seaboard for was sure. It?
Oh, okay.
Like I was like, is this Louisiana? But it doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm. It looked more like Vancouver.
I think they filmed most of the stuff in Georgia.
Well, that's what their big logo says.
Anyway, so that one was fun because it definitely was the whole, like, noir, like, trying to figure out, like, you know, he's sort of getting his memories back piecemeal.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of playfulness, there is a lot of goofiness going on because, like, you know, he wakes up and there's a zombie trying to kill him. And so he, like, you know, crushes her head with a rock. At which point, she's there, like, talking to him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, so he's like, so if you're gonna talk, you're gonna walk. And so he's like dragging this walking zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is hilarious because, like, you think about it and, like, he has to be carrying her somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not actually walking.
I thought he just, like, bashed her jaw off, so, like, it turns out she can't really eat him, but
No. Yeah,
probably not.
Anyway, so the whole thing is, like, there is, like, these weird kind of mordant comic moments where he's, like, you know, talking to the zombie and making her walk around. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. The whole thing is just, like...
It was like the Swiss Army Man. Did you ever watch that?
No, I never did.
Which is, it's about, like, Harry Potter... Yeah. There's a dead corpse.
Yeah.
That, like, sort of talks to this guy. And it was sort of like that, where it's sort of this sort of funny, you know, because obviously it's not the corpse, it's you.
Right. Right, right, right.
But it's taking the form of this corpse who's following you around.
Yeah.
Because you're handcuffed to it.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, and that one turned into, you know, one of those, like, it turns out it was me all along. No, it wasn't him. I don't really care.
Yeah.
It's fine. It ends fine.
Yeah.
Although, I, like, just...
It was the older son. Spoiler alert.
But, asterisk, I have a thing about how rarely children zombies show up.
Yeah, that was one of the things.
And there were at least three.
Oh, child zombies.
Yeah.
You can totally see you pulling out the little, like, memo pad in your brain, the child zombie memo pad, and marking it off.
I absolutely did. I absolutely did. Because,
like, you're collecting them like Hummels.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. So, yeah. So, anyway, child zombies, you're welcome. Child
zombies, yep.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's got to be a huge pain in the ass because there's all these restrictions on how long children can be
dead.
Also, like, on camera, and then you add in whatever, however many hours it takes to get them, like, in makeup, and now it's down to nothing.
Right.
Anyway, not that that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, now, the very last one, which we just watched, mm-hmm. and this is the first one that is not named after the principal characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's called La Doña. And it is a claustrophobic gothic wig out.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally... This one was the only one that has treated zombieism the way it should be treated, which is completely mystical. Like... obviously physics doesn't allow for zombies, and everybody's like, well, it's like rabies and they're fast zombies, or it's like whatever, and there's mm-hmm. some explanation for why a dead body can get up and prance around, mm-hmm. but the reality is they can't. Mm-hmm. So if they can, something immensely more fucksword is going on here. So you need to like just acknowledge that. And at one point, like, there's this house is filled with crucifixes, and all of the little Jesus figures start jumping off the cross and attacking her, all like, I mean, and it's not supposed to be funny, but it's very much like
Ash
getting attacked by little tiny ashes. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of funny, but it's like they're also a bunch of dead Jesuses, like zombie Jesuses,
yeah,
are attacking her,
yeah,
which is like this sort of, I don't know, like it was just really fascinating to watch. I mean, it wasn't funny. It was actually it was really horrifying. I mean, this is the first time since maybe the first season where I felt real horror or chills, you know, I mean, it was spooky.
The episode was
spooky as hell.
It was completely filled with atmosphere, and they did a really good job of, like, I was so tense because I just felt like there was always something just out of the camera view.
Yeah, I was
they played bracing with myself it really well.
I was really bracing myself for that parrot to start having conversations in a really creepy way, you know, like, my God. And it was creepy, but it was like, I kept bracing myself for all kinds of things. And so I was absolutely not prepared for tiny zombie Jesuses. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Like a whole horde of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said this before, but like, I really feel like, I mean, because this is, okay. So quickly, the plot is these two people are like kind of on the run from it's obviously a friend of theirs who's now a zombie.
Maria, the zombie.
Maria, the
zombie. Is following them.
And it's a couple, and the woman says, you know, oh, I know this woman who has to live nearby.
She's a witch. So we can only stay there one night.
Yeah, because
which
otherwise...
is such a fairy tale.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of
we're
going
to go to the witch in the woods, and you can only stay there one night. And of course, he starts an argument during dinner when she immediately is like, you guys have to get out. This is my house. And they're like, you know, they convince her to stay one night. And so at dinner, he's like, well, why can't we just keep staying here? You have so much space. And mm-hmm. like, we don't take up that much space. Like, we could totally do that. And she's just like, get out. Mm-hmm. And then he starts at her and she has some sort of weird heart attack, falls over, hits her head, and cacks. And at that point, I was preparing for some sort of, because I mean, up until this point, it's been straight. Like, this is the opening, right? Where it's like everything's still normal. Yep. You do have some hints that something's wrong, like all of the crucifixes in her crucifix collection.
Well, the fact that she was described as a witch.
Yes, she is a witch.
You know.
And then she up and dies, and you're just sort of like, okay, this is really unsettling. And at one point, the woman is like, we should just leave after one night. And he's like, this is perfect. I mean, she's got electricity and running water somehow, which is also spooky.
It is actually alarming. How is that even possible?
She's out in the middle of nowhere. So I could maybe see a well and maybe see a generator or solar. Fine. But it's witch. It's witchcraft. Like, that's how she's keeping the lights on.
The whole thing is witchcraft. Yeah.
It's just
top to bottom.
Totally spooky. And then spooky things start really happening. And the woman starts realizing that these are basically hallucinations. And they are, that's what's going to end up killing them. Is like at one point, like the dude goes out to the gate and Maria is talking to him. And so he tries to let her in. And so he totally believes that Maria is somehow fine and doesn't really have a broken ankle. And then they start yelling at each other, and you get glimpses of the story right before the episode starts, where Maria had hurt herself and probably needed to be put down. So the woman probably killed her. And then Maria's friends started asking questions about it, and then they, like, the guy had to kill them, and it was some sort of like survival thing. And so, like, you get the backstory that, like, maybe they're not good people. Like, maybe not she even actually maybe. Killed Maria.
Yeah. No, I think
straight out to steal from her or whatever, and like everybody else started asking questions, so he killed them. And now it's like their troubled past is chasing them. And so when this lady just up and cacks, like, they start hallucinating all of this stuff.
Well,
because of their own guilt.
This would be the, like, past thing again, you know?
Yeah.
But then also I thought was interesting is that, like, so zombies are about what they're about. They're about, like, consumerism or, you know, whatever, nostalgia for the present, blah, right. blah. But ghosts are about your embarrassing, angry past, you know? Yeah. They are about your guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And so this one treated, I mean, there is sort of straight up a ghost of the bruja.
Yeah.
But they sort of treat the zombies like that.
Yeah, like you go in the basement and all of a sudden there's all these zombies coming out of the roots trying to eat you.
Right, which...
Or are you hallucinating them?
Which were the people that they just killed. Like, in the flashback, it's the same actors.
Right.
And so I thought it was really cool because largely zombie stories don't deal... Like, that's not part of the memeplex or that's not part of the, like, symbolic structure.
Well, and I think part of it is because that sort of interiority is really hard to film. And I think that this episode managed to pull it off pretty well because it's like, how do you film it when somebody is having some sort of... breakdown, you know, a mental breakdown, and film it from the inside so that they're basically unreliable narrators, and I think it causes you to question what you're seeing, which I think is great.
It was really great. They did all these, like, really good dumb tricks, like they're sleeping in her bedroom, which the woman is not okay with, or you know, like, she's the one who's really upset about the fact that they're staying in this witch's house.
In her bed.
She doesn't like that either. And she, like, wakes up at one point and there's this wallpaper, which is just actually horrible. It's like all peacock feathers. Mm-hmm. It's the eye of the peacock feathers, which then start blinking.
Yeah.
And it's just horrible.
Well, and then there's the other scene where it's like she looks over her sleeping boyfriend and there's the witch standing
over them,
like Paranormal Activity. And then the candle blows out. And so now you have this horrifying minute where you have to figure out how to light a match, you know, because the electricity is not on for some reason or whatever.
Well, you didn't. Yeah.
Anyway. And then you light it and then you realize that she's not really there or is she? Of course she is. She keeps whispering to you.
Yeah. Anyway.
Freaky parrot keeps saying freaky things at you.
Although I do have to say that, like, this was just sort of like only levity for us, but, like, our son did an apprenticeship at the zoo and he learned that there are all of these parrots that had been gifted to the zoo upon the death of this old guy. And most of them can't be on exhibit because they swear too much. Because
he taught his parents to swear.
And they sound like little old men. And so, like, around the family, we call them the Swearits.
Because they are Swearits.
Because they're Swearits. And so, like, when there was a parrot in this episode, you were like, oh no, it's a Swearit. What swears in Spanish?
Tango Frio.
Tango Frio. Anyway, I thought they did a really good job of, like, because the parrot is actually creepy, too.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that
it was... Because it can talk.
I think it was interesting because they had a lot of restraint.
Yeah.
Because they could have gone way over the top with it. They could have had it saying all kinds of horrible stuff. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's just weird enough.
Yeah, which is an art. I mean, this was definitely like a Conjuring style creep fest.
Yeah.
Where it just sort of like, you know, makes all your hair stand up.
Yeah.
Because it's creepy. And it's something that The Walking Dead just doesn't do.
No.
Because that's not what it's about. The Walking Dead as a franchise is about, like, describing what society is.
Right.
And these last little episodes have all been about describing what people are.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, really kind of cool little vignettes into, mm-hmm. like, whatever. And I love that they were done in different styles, like a Groundhog Day or a Conjuring or whatever, but it was really neat
noir.
To like have it wrap up with this sort of horror style,
yeah,
you know, really like actually scary in a way that zombie movies are. Like the first one was an action movie, you know. I mean, like it was creepy, I guess, but it was like it's. I mean, a lot of them end up being action movies.
Well, they're not. I mean, like when you're dealing with the undead who literally have no brains, it's not psychological horror.
Right, but it is like societal commentary, and this was really more just horror, which I thought was neat.
Yeah, no, totally. Anyway, so I thought that the whole, even the episodes I wasn't as excited about were fine.
Yeah.
And I just thought the whole experiment was wonderful.
I hope they keep it going.
I would totally. Really, yeah.
I would love to watch more of this because it really does feel like the Twilight Zone where each episode is its own thing.
Yep.
And you can be surprised by it. And you know the world, so you know the bounds of it.
Yeah.
But each, like, and again, each one of these things broke the rules in very specific ways.
Yep.
They took the franchise and they said, okay, which one of these are we going to break and what does that mean for the story?
Yep.
Like, okay, we're going to break the one where it's not like horror, like where people aren't creeped out or mm-hmm. or scared. And if we make them scared, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, like we're going to break the whole thing that time flows linearly and we're going to like rewind the day every day like Groundhog Day. And we're going to break it in that specific way. What does that mean for the story?
Yeah.
How does that change things in the Walking Dead verse?
Yeah.
You know, which was very, very cool to like watch them like pick a rule and break it.
Yeah.
In like a little anthology style, you know.
Yeah.
Like
no.
It's almost like a little book of short stories.
Yeah.
Set in the Walking Dead universe.
Absolutely.
And it was just awesome to see all those different interpretations. Really well done. I do actually want to watch them again, mostly because I didn't see the first half of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But also because I kind of want to rewatch the Groundhog Day one.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other ones just to like sort of get more out of them because I know there was more in them
because they were
carefully made.
They were carefully made. They were very, very cool. I mean, I think the short story analogy is perfect because it's just like they're just these little, like deeply thought out, cool little moments.
Yeah. And almost all of them have that knife twist at the end.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Sort of like, and here's the point. Drive it home and twist it.
It's totally
what
true.
What a twist.
All right. Well, I think this was amazing. We're going to watch it again.
High five.
High five.